Kenny Aronoff is with us. His book, Sex, Drums, Rock and Roll. He's in the L.A. studios. Our Gary Patterson is on the phone, and we're going to take your calls when we come back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast, Kenny Aronoff, living the dream, proving, of course, that if you set your mind to something, you can do it. We've got rock historian R. Gary Patterson with us as well, and then we're going to take your phone calls this hour. These shows go by fast, Kenny, almost as fast as a rock show. So you have a chapter where it says Kenny gets fired. What happened?
Was that the first Kenny gets fired? Because there's three chapters.
That's true. This is chapter 9 I'm looking at.
Okay, well, the first time that's probably what it's talking about is where I get fired with the Mellencamp Band, and that was a life-changing moment for me because, you know, I'd worked with Leonard Bernstein. I'd won, you know, the highest honors you could get at the number one school of music in the country, which was Indiana University. So I just thought I was invincible at that point. When I got in the Mellencamp Band, you know, I knew how to prepare for auditions. When they said, be familiar with the record, I practiced 8 hours a day and memorized every single note the drummer played and rehearsed it over and over again. And I came in there auditioning like I was in a stadium, you know, and I won the audition and got in the band. But what John was looking for were musical ideas for me as a drummer. He'd play a song on acoustic guitar and I had to come up with ideas. My vocabulary was not of the style of music that he was writing. So my ideas were not, you know, perfect for his songs. And if anything, they were just more technical and more coming from a different vocabulary. And also I didn't have the cool drums in 1980. When he came to L.A., everybody switched to double-headed drums. I was playing single-headed, well, I'm talking about toms, that is. Toms had single-headed toms and had thick heads. And there was a tension between us. I'd only been in the band for 5 weeks. So John stayed at the Chateau Marmont, famous hotel where Belushi died, and, you know,
that's right.
A lot of actors were living there. We saw De Niro and Meryl Streep at the beginning of their careers. And anyway, I've been in the studio for 2 days, and we have a band meeting at somebody's room. And John basically said to me, listen, you don't have a lot of experience making records for the radio, which is true. And he kept going on and blah, blah, blah. I kept saying to myself, no, 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 I'm not going home. Because he had said, suggest I go home. And I said, I'm not going to go home. And then I realized I was a fight or flight guy, not a fight or flight guy. And so just something took over me and there was no way I was going home. So I said to John, look, am I still the drummer in your band? He looked very perplexed. And, you know, said, well, yeah, he wanted to know what I was getting at. And I didn't even know what I was getting at. And I just said, well, I'm going to go to the studio and I'm going to watch these other drummers play my parts. And I'm going to learn from them. And I'm going to learn from being in the studio. And I'm going to benefit from that. And then you're going to benefit from that because I'm still your drummer. And you don't have to pay me and I'll sleep on the floor. And he didn't pay me. And I got to sleep in a bed. And I did stay, and it was very humiliating, but I did learn a lot. And I went home after 4 weeks and set up an 8-hour practice routine and started to figure out a new way of playing the drums. And my focus was, you know, to make the next record, which was American Fool, which was the toughest record I've ever made in my life, but it did win 2 Grammys. And that's launched
that's
my
exciting.
Career.
That is
so
exciting.
The main thing is that, you know, my back was against the wall. That was a life-changing moment. And I don't know who spoke on my behalf, but something came out of me that, you know, could have easily saved my career.
Some of these newer, younger singers that are out there today, the Katy Perrys, the Pharrell Williams, Sam Smith, and those folks, have you had a chance to play with them yet? Or if you have, what do you think of them?
Well, some of these people, well, I haven't done those three. I've played live with Lady Gaga. I've played live with Bruno Mars. I've played live with, not Katy Perry. I've met her. A lot of these times I'll play on their records, but.
Or Miley Cyrus.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But, oh, well, I mean, Katy Perry's obviously talented. Lady Gaga's super talented because very smart. I saw the way she came in the Kennedy Center honors when we were honoring Sting, the way she took control. First of all, a lot of times artists, they put their back to you and they to the band and they rehearse as if they're performing. She physically turned the keyboard around herself, put the music up, started reading it and doing different voicings and started rehearsing, and she asked the musical director, how many times can I do this? And he said, well, as many times you want. She says, cool, let's do 8 times. Well, you know, she just was so positive and so amazing. Anyway, some of these people, and Bruno Mars was amazing. I mean, he actually, we were doing a medley, and he wanted a certain feel and a certain part for me. He couldn't figure out how to tell me. So he said, do you mind if I sit down at the drums? I went, go right ahead. And he still couldn't figure it out. And I figured out what he was trying to do. I mean, he was very clear about ideas he had and super talented. So, yeah. And who was the other person you met? Katy Perry. She can sing. And who else did you mention? Forget who you mentioned. Anyway, so a lot of them are very talented.
Great. Gary, I'm going to bring you in. We're going to take calls, but I want everyone to know that if you're out in the L.A. area, Kenny's going to be there. It's called Conversation with Kenny. He'll be at the Grammy Museum in L.A. at 7:30, and also a book signing for his book, Sex, Drums, Rock and Roll, at the Book Soup in Los Angeles. That'll be Thursday at 7 o'clock. And it's, let me tell you, it's a great book. If you're into the history of rock and roll, through the perspective of a superstar, it's a great book. Gary, another question or two for Kenny, and then we'll take some calls.
Yeah, I think that one of the parts I enjoy in the book is when you were playing in Russia, Kenny, and you decided to do a Keith Moon.
Oh, man. Are you talking about when we were playing for Putin and that time?
A certain drum set that was very rare.
Oh my God, you're talking about Smashing Pumpkins. Okay, yeah. Okay, what he's talking about was I'd never done this before, and I'd gotten a very hard to find a Thomas Star Classic kit, and there was one, and we were playing, and we couldn't bring our equipment because we had just flown from Greece. And we had to go to Russia, and the next time we'd see our gear was in Germany. So the equipment went from Greece to Germany. We flew to Russia and got backline, which is rented gear. So they get me this amazing kit, and at the end of the last song, I stand up, and I've got gloves on, drummer gloves. I start slamming into the cymbals with my fist, and then I just completely Keith Moon it and start kicking the drums over. And my tech is going, no, no, no. I didn't see him do that. The reason why he was saying no was that kit belonged to a KGB's son. And the KGB man said to my tech, is he good with equipment? Does he take care of it? And he said, absolutely. Are you kidding me? Kenny Aronoff is so respectful. And I decided that one night to go kick the kit over my riser onto, and the KGB guy looked at my tech and gave him that thing where, you know, I could slice your neck, mm-hmm. like I'm going to kill you.
You lied to me.
And I went running off the stage like nothing, jumped onto the bus, and just, I didn't know anything was going wrong. That's.
Kenny, do you get involved at all politically with any of the candidates, or do you stay middle of the road?
I stay middle of the road. I mean, I've got my own opinions of things, but I don't get involved with, I mean, I've met 4 presidents, and, you know, I met Clinton. I had a great, in the book I talk about an incredible hang with him.
He played the saxophone, right?
Yeah. But it was with John Fogerty. We did something at the Ford Theater, and I had a moment with Bill Clinton that was awesome. And I actually was at a party with him once. I mean, he's great. He's like the coolest.
He's very personable.
Coolest dude in the world.
Yeah,
very And I met Obama, and I met Carter a couple times, and I've met...
Did you meet Reagan at the time?
No, I didn't meet him. Before. That would have been probably cool.
Yeah.
But the
Bushes you met?
Yeah.
Cool. All right, let's take some calls with Kenny. And Gary, you stay with us. You might have some calls here too or questions. Jump in anytime you want. Daryl in Sacramento, California, you're up with us. Go ahead, Daryl.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Great.
Great.
Yeah, Kenny, I wanted to know, as the studio work, along the time when the drum machine came about and electric drums, did that get in the way of you, in the way of your job as far as studio work or any live work? Because I noticed that you mentioned Phil Collins, and I believe on one of his albums, he sounded like he had incorporated the drum machine big time, but you could tell he was programming or actually playing it, which gave it a whole different sound. That was my question to you.
Yeah, I mean, well, of course, you know, when Jack and Diane, we didn't know how to make that song. That song's off the record. We didn't know what to do with it. And somebody walked through in the Lin 1 drum machine. I was like, it was like the devil. So I grabbed it and I programmed it. And then the good ending of the story, just like in Phil Collins' In the Air Tonight, was I overdubbed real drums on top of it. And, you know, it was amazing. But as time's gone on, you know, drum programming, sequencing is extremely popular. And there are definitely songs that are just the feel and the sound that people want is the drum machine or a program, which then, you know, obviously takes the place of a real drummer. It just is what it is. A lot of times I get the crazy thing that's happening now is I'll record live drums. Someone send me a demo, and they've got programmed drums, you know, and there's a lot of different programs out there. And then I overdub real drums, and then I get a mix of it later, and they've put samples on my drums, and I can tell they're trying to make it sound like those programmed drums.
Yeah.
They're just used to hearing programmed drums through earbuds. And
no, you're right.
And I'm
you're
giving right. them... This, because when you put samples on organic drums, a lot of times if you put them on loud, you're taking a lot of the feel out of the human touch, the home you feel, because you're not letting you hit a drum and it goes into all the different microphones and you can't program that. You know, where the sample sounds are just precisely what they are. It's like same certain kind of decay, compression, attack, and it's consistent. But it's not, doesn't have that human feel. So it's weird, you know. I mean, there's so much of that now that some people prefer that sound. So to answer your question, yeah, that stuff did definitely, if you had no drum machines, you had no programming or sequences, then the drummers would have to do everything. It is what it is. I'm not saying anything other than that. It is what it is. It's just things change, and so...
Technology does things.
Some
like
people
that.
Like that program sound, and some people would prefer the John Bonham Led Zeppelin sound. Some people like, listen, some people want me to play as stiff as a drum machine or a program, and I kind of laugh. I go, it's harder for me to play like a robot than to play like a human.
That's right. That's right. Gary, isn't it amazing, too, how this technology has affected just about everything? I mean, I've been to some places, some clubs where the guy's got his keyboard and he's got the drums, the horns, the violins, everything built in. Technology's amazing, Gary.
Yeah. I was going to ask Kenny if he hears any of his samples on other records, some of your parts that have been sampled and used.
Well, I know. I mean, Brendan O'Brien, one of the greatest producer engineers, admitted to me he used the sample of my snare drum sound off the Scarecrow record for this was back a long time ago. He said it was for 15 years he was using it on Pearl, you know, on the Pearl Jam, on the Soundgarden, on the STP. Even the STP guys laughed and told me, man, you're all over our record, you know. He'd like to mix that snare sound just underneath, you know, the other snare sound for mixing. It just had a certain frequency he liked. I gave it away when, you know, when you start a song with a snare crack on a snare drum, like bat, you know, like check it out, bat. I mean, I gave it away. There, you know.
Let's go to Cliff, Bristol, Tennessee. Cliff, go ahead.
Hey, guys. Great show, by the way.
Thank you.
And let's see. Gary, you're in Nashville. I'm in East Tennessee, Bristol. So I'm not far from you.
That's true. You are. Pretty close. A couple hours away.
Yep, just about 5 hours away. Kenny, big fan.
Thank you.
let's see, Jack and Diane, definitely one of my favorites.
Thank you.
You know, I was in high school, early 80s, Jack and Diane come out. Definitely one of my favorites. Just a couple questions. Quick questions. What was your favorite band? And number two, when it comes to drugs, do you think when a musician, well, when they become famous, you know, it's obvious they get that natural high and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Do some musicians just turn to drugs to, at some point, to continue that high? I don't know how to put it any other words, but that. But anyway, I'll take my answer off the air, and you guys are awesome. Keep up the good work.
All right, Cliff, thanks. Go ahead, Kenny, if you wanted to answer the drug question.
Well, the drug, I mean, it's an individual thing. I don't know I know what he's saying. He may be suggesting that you get such a high playing music, and is it natural that, therefore, to try to find that high in other ways, which would be like alcohol or...
Well, Louis Armstrong was on pot all the time.
Well, but, I mean, I know... athletes are on pot all the time. I mean, sometimes people smoke pot to calm themselves down. I can't smoke pot because it makes my muscles weak and I get spacey and
it throws you off.
It doesn't help me. Some people can do it. I can't. I don't put anybody down. Everybody's got their own life to live. But and I don't do anything before I play. I mean, you know, when I was younger and you did it, but it doesn't help. I mean, when I was younger playing at bars. You know, at some point, you know, drinking beers and having fun, but when I became really professional, it's just you know, and I need all the help I can get. So I and as a drummer, as physical as I am, you know, I can't be doing anything before I play. So afterwards, I'll have, you know, a glass of wine or a beer. But anyway, the drug thing, you know, I don't. That's an individual thing. I couldn't tell you why other people do that stuff, but obviously, they're looking to get a buzz. You know, they want to high. They want. Maybe he's right. Maybe the, you know, it's just another way of getting high: playing music and then drinking or doing some sort of drugs. You know.
Did you have a favorite band that you played with?
Well,
here we go again.
That's a tough one. I mean, obviously, playing with Mellencamp was amazing because that was where I was involved with those songs. You know, creating those drum parts. I felt like that was part of me. I mean, one time I turned down an Elton John tour, and Bernie Taupin came to the L.A. Forum, which was sold out, 18,000 people. He says, "I can't believe you turned down an Elton John tour. I'm there playing with Mellencamp. I mean, look at this, dude. We've got this sold out, and they're hearing, here I am playing my songs with John." It's kind of hard to walk away from that.
It sure is. Hold on, Kenny. We'll be back with more. Gary Patterson with us. Our final segment just ahead with your calls on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast and our final segment with Kenny Aronoff and Sex, Drums, Rock and Roll. The book is available at Amazon.com and major bookstores as well. Let's go to the phones again. Susan from Savannah, Georgia with us. There you go, Susan. Welcome to the program.
Thanks. Hello, George. How are you?
I'm wonderful. Thank you.
Hi, Gary, and hello, Kenny.
How
Susan,
you doing?
I know your voice.
Yeah.
I know your voice.
My last name is Messino. I've been on your show.
Oh, you have the AC/DC book you worked on.
Yeah.
Well, great. There you go. You're on with Kenny. Go ahead, and Gary.
Well, it's an honor, and believe me, Kenny, I'm a longtime fan. I met you back when you played with Rick Derringer.
Wow. What happened?
And one of my favorite albums that you played on is Sweet Evil, one of Rick's albums. And, yeah, I was wondering, after all these years, because I've followed your career, in those days when you're playing with Rick, did you have any idea that you were going to end up one of the top 100 drummers of all time?
Oh, of course not. I had no idea. It's a nice honor, I'll tell you that. It's really nice. You know, I just going about my business, and so when you make that list, You know, it's like the running back in football. He's supposed to focus on just scoring touchdowns, not focus on anything else. And at the end of his career, and he suddenly realizes he's the top five running backs of all time. That's nice. But you don't look at that as your goal. Do what you're supposed to do, and those honors will come in. But, you know, it's fantastic that I'm recognized like that. But like I said, there's a lot of great drummers that weren't even on that list.
Kenny, are you tough on yourself?
Very. I'm very, well, I've learned how to, okay, I have a statement. It's in the book even. I'll never be as great as I want to be, but I'm willing to spend the rest of my life trying to be as great as I can be.
Yes, that's great.
And I call that the human condition. So I have to accept the human as not being perfect, and so I have to be the player and the coach. A lot of times I will coach myself. You know, when you're laying in bed and you're feeling like something you're doing is not happening fast enough, or you feel like you're having failure or setbacks, I now tell myself to chill down, because I become the coach now, and I tell myself, listen, how many times have you felt like this and you have succeeded? You just need to give yourself a little bit more time here. Hey, listen, that book I thought was going to be done in 2 years, it took 4 years. I have.
Had a lot of things to do.
Well, I'm doing a lot of things. But, you know, the book, I mean, it didn't come out the way I wanted it at first. And then it was 600 pages long and had to be done, trimmed down to 300 pages. And what do you leave in and what do you leave out? What can you put in that a 90-year-old mom can read but a 10-year-old kid, and then be truthful? And how do you handle a lot of the stories I put in there in a cool way? Anyway, I'm constantly working with myself as the coach and the player, because I am very tough on myself.
Gary, you've seen that a lot with greatness out there, haven't you?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And, you know, when I think of Kenny, when you look at his book and you look at how many songs he played on, a lot of people know about him being with John Fogerty and John Mellencamp. Mm-hmm. Smashing Pumpkins, but you know, there's two other names that I'll go in as far as the session work, and Kenny, this is a good compliment to you, because I think of Gary Chester.
Oh yeah.
And I think of Hal Blaine. And you know, just some of the most memorable drum licks for session players. And you know, when I hear Hal Blaine start the Ronette song, you know, I mean, those drums just go through it. And one of the funniest things I remember in your book is, you're the only drummer I know that had to take out a Lloyd's of London policy to get back from Hong Kong to do a show with Bob Seger.
They took out a policy on me because they weren't sure I was going to make it. That's Sasha, explain it in the book. It's like I'm with Mellencamp. Mellencamp had to go to Hong Kong. He didn't want to. I was on a 5-day break from a Bob Seger tour. John had to do it because he was going to be the guest artist or band for a big corporate meeting for Polygram Records. And the band the year before was U2, and the band before the year before that was Elton John. And his manager said, look, you got a record coming out. You need this record company to support you. You got to go. So I had to tell Seger, and here's the problem. It's one thing if you're going to land day of a show in Detroit at 9 in the morning. It's another thing if you're going to land at 2:30 and sound checks at 4. No, not 2:30, 3 o'clock. Mm-hmm. And you can't get to sound check in time. I did. They arranged for a helicopter to pick me up at the airport and get me there. I got there 5 minutes before the band. But the point is, they were worried. The Seger organization was worried that I wasn't going to make it at all. So the first policy was going to be $150,000 or something, but the Pistons lost in the playoffs unexpectedly. So instead of making up the date months later, you could actually make up the date a day later, and that's not as expensive. So the policy came out to be $3,400, and John Mellencamp said, they're not going to make you pay for it. And I said, yes, they are. And they did. They did. They took it out of my You know what? I never did ask for a receipt. I should have looked.
You should have.
Should have looked.
Write that off.
I know. Well, maybe they didn't charge. Maybe they charged me and never got the policy.
That's possible. Let's go to Steve in South Dakota. Hey, Steven, go ahead.
Hey, Kenny Arloff, I so much appreciate your power and passion.
Thank you.
Absolutely stunning. I got two questions and a comment. Number one, if anybody wants to see the power of Kenny Arloff, go on to YouTube, the Royal Albert Hall. You were playing a Green Sparkle Pama kit and Fortunate Son. Absolutely out of this world.
Yeah.
And second of all, your tribute to Buddy Rich, you were among, what, 7 or 8 drummers?
I think more than that. There's 17, I think, on the double record.
You and Simon Phillips and a lot of other people.
Yeah.
Did you find that genre a little different than what you're used to?
Oh, yeah, dude, I was scared because, I mean, I'd been recording. I wasn't home practicing. I was practicing at midnight or 1 in the morning. I was 3 weeks steady doing sessions, and some of the bands I recorded with right before that was like Cinderella, Hank Jr.
Yeah.
I was all over the map, and those aren't swing bands, so I would have to practice, like I said, midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning. Those two songs, Straight No Chasers, scared me to death. And that band was unbelievably powerful and perfectly in time. If you didn't play in time, they were going to leave you in the dust. And it was intimidating. They looked at you like you were the janitor.
Yeah.
I mean, it was intimidating.
You did a fantastic job.
Thank you. Thank you.
And the last thing is, you were on David Letterman with John Fogerty, and you did a short medley of 3 songs.
Mm-hmm.
And you were sitting back there just working your butt off, just really, really hard. And after you were done, David Letterman comes up to John Fogerty and he says, "You know, I don't want to tell you how to run your business or anything, but I think your drummer's anemic."
That was Letterman and I knew each other, and I'd done the show 50 times, subbing for Anton, and it was just him being funny because obviously I'm not anemic.
I miss him.
Oh, I do too. He was great.
Have you ever had a neighbor complain, Kenny, because you were playing too much in the garage or someplace?
Of course. Of course. I've had my sister and my parents, I mean, in the book were saying, my mom and my sister were both saying, like, I drove them crazy. I didn't realize that. I had vibes in one room, timpani in another room, drum set in another room. I took over everything. And my sister says she's, you know, got some twitch in her whenever she hears somebody playing scales on a marimba or something. It makes her twitch. I didn't realize it was that bad.
Are drums different? I mean, are there different styles of drums that would be better than another one?
Well, everyone's got their personal taste. It's just like cars, you know, different woods, different bearing edges, different, you know, hardware. Yeah, there's definitely different sounding drums. That's for sure.
Our buddy Frank Beard from ZZ Top, good guy. What do you think?
Oh, fantastic. I play with Billy Gibbons quite a bit. I did this year. I'm going to be playing with him supposedly on December 16th for an event. And the Fogerty and ZZ Top did a couple of days together in Europe at one point. I just stand on the side of the stage and watch Frank Beard play.
His
parts are phenomenal.
Carl in Milwaukee, welcome to the show, Carl. Go ahead.
Oh, hey, good morning, guys. I'll tell you, George, I have my fingers crossed. I was hoping that you were going to get to me. Kenny, I am a lifelong drummer. I love your work. You are truly a consummate musician. I've got a real quick story and then a question to ask, if that's okay.
Sure. Go ahead.
I'm a little bit older, grew up in the golden age of rock and roll drumming. And Kenny, in the summer of 1966, in a period of about 1 month, I saw Carmen play with the Vanilla Fudge. I saw Johnny Barbeta with the Turtles, who was just an incredible, solid, and visual drummer.
Right.
But the best drummer I've ever seen in my life, and I've seen Buddy Rich a bunch of times, John Bonham, saw the Stones play.
Wow.
The absolute most incredible drummer, live drummer, solid and visual, was Dino Danelli with the Rascals.
Oh, yeah.
I was literally 5 feet away from him when he played Mickey's Monkey and Love Lights, and he set that place on fire.
I saw him with the Young Rascals. Hey, how about the stick twirl he would do?
Oh man, are you kidding me? I mean, we all saw Ringo, but when I saw Dino Danelli,
yeah,
and he had like that Nehru jacket, he sat real high on the drums,
yeah,
and he tasteful, solid, groove oriented. And the question I wanted to ask you, Kenny, is who is, you know, your was or is your favorite rock and roll drummer to see live?
Oh, see live? Oh.
Yeah. And it could be somebody that you've seen in the past or, you know, somebody that you might see next week, a live rock and roll drummer.
Oh, well, a live rock and roll drummer who's great to look at and has great parts and the whole thing was Dave Grohl, from Foo Fighters. But if he doesn't play drums with them anymore, but he's incredible. But, you know, he comes from that whole Bonham scene, but also a punk thing. But as far as, like, you know, the drummers, rock and roll drummers that
tough question.
I loved, you know, see, live is one thing. The other thing is, who do you like as a rock drummer? You know, obviously Bonham is top, 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 and then Mitch Mitchell, because Mitch Mitchell influenced me a lot because I grew up playing jazz as a little kid, and Mitch Mitchell was a jazz drummer playing rock and roll. So, and I saw Mitch Mitchell play with Hendrix. I mean, Keith Moon was a great live drummer because the way he looked when he played, he was exciting. You know, so when you say live, that brings it to another category. Great drummer, but then live, these are some of the guys like Keith Moon, Dave Grohl. They just look good, you know, when they play, and they also are great drummers.
Kenny, are you ever going to hold up your sticks and retire, or are you going to keep going?
You're talking Russian right now. I don't even know what language you're talking.
Uh-huh.
What is retire? What does that mean?
I've told Tom.
Wrong guy.
I'm never going to retire. I'm going to die on the air.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be there with you.
Take me away.
We could talk in our 100-year croaky voices. How's it out there, Kenny?
I wonder if you'll have the same kind of speed when you're 100 years old.
I know I won't.
What do you think?
I won't. But
you play different music then.
I'll have the same amount of passion.
That's right. And Gary, you'll still be out there, huh?
Of course. You know, I think that rock and roll keeps you young, keeps you going. I think it has passion. I think that people who listen to it get into it. I think that, you know, it's the highway of our life, and Kenny's really put the beat there, the heartbeat behind it, and it's a privilege to talk to him tonight. I mean, just the songs the guys played on and the genres of music. I mean, playing country music, rock, heavy. I mean, just everything. It's just a consummate musician, Kenny. You've done a fabulous job in your career.
Thank you, man. I mean, that's a big compliment because I got criticized when I was playing classical music from the jazzers, and classical guys would tease me, it vice versa, and then they all made fun of me playing rock, and then I'd be doing R&B, and I'd be doing country, and I'd be doing anything, Zydeco, and people would, it's so weird. You'd think that musicians were the most open, but I was criticized all the time, and I just ignored them all. I just did what I wanted. In the end, that made me a well-rounded musician, which you just noticed, and I appreciate that.
Love your passion about what you do, Kenny, too. It's
Thank
just
you.
Fantastic. Let's go to first-time caller Stephanie in Baldwin Park, California. Hi, Stephanie. Go ahead.
Hello?
Yeah, hi.
Hi, George. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just had a quick question for you. What did you think about, going back to your question, about young people, young artists, young artists passing away so young. What did you think about them selling their souls to the devil?
Ah, that's that story, Gary. Gary, I'll let you start with that for Kenny.
Oh, you're talking about the Robert Johnson myth, you know, that goes in. I mean, when you take a look at the Delta Blues and you take a look at Robert Johnson, I mean, what got Eric Clapton into Robert Johnson? It was the myth. Same thing with Keith Richards, same thing with Jimmy Page. And then you discover the music. I mean, it was something that just sort of had a storyline that made you listen to the music. And when people paid to get into the juke joints to see Robert Johnson play, then it wasn't bad for business, even though Robert Johnson never claimed he had sold his soul to the devil. It just seems like it goes that way from the American South, where you have, like Little Richard said once, you have God's music and you have the devil's music. Well, for me, I think it's great music, and I think as long as it makes you happy, and I think that's the key thing with it. I think that sometimes urban myths, urban legends, they make stories interesting if they introduce us to the music, makes it more viable in our lives, and generates young students growing up to become great musicians. And I think the storyline goes along with it, just like rock stars dying at 27. It's a terrible thing.
Yeah,
it's a sad thing that it happens, but you know, it's just part of it out there.
It is indeed. Gary, we're wrapping things up. I want to thank you for co-hosting this segment with me. I really appreciate it. You're one of a kind, my friend. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, George. Hope to see you soon. And Kenny.
Yeah, nice meeting you, buddy.
Keep rocking, man.
Well, you know I will.
Our Gary Patterson, he's one of a kind. And Kenny, thank you for being on the program. And again, Kenny can be heard, Conversations with Kenny, at the Grammy Museum in L.A. at 7:30 on Tuesday night. And then a book signing at the Book Soup in L.A. on Thursday at 7. The name of the book, Sex, Drugs, Rock and Roll. Thanks, Ken. Good to talk with you. I'll be back again tomorrow for Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latizor, Stephanie Smith, Chris Borles, and George Knapp. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.